The road ahead, as Michael was saying, is much clearer. And so as a leadership team, we've been working on this strategic plans, what we call strategic intent, over the last few months. And then tomorrow we have a series of meetings all day, but particularly the apostolic team meets from 4 to 7, and then Michael and I meet with the senior elders from 7 to 10 to go over any final adjustments on this. Then what we're going to do is pull together all of our churches by clusters, and then we'll, once this is completely finalized, then we'll sit down in the smaller group of 3-4 churches at a time in the clusters, and we'll go over this in detail. Randy and Caleb, Randy's been reworking it now, evaluation piece we're going to hand out, where it'll list all the different what we call strategic projects and some of the needs that are on them and opportunities to serve. And so that'll be passed around at the cluster meetings as well. Now, this is not a formal presentation of this plan. What we want to do is I'm going to walk us through several of these strategic projects and sort of interview James and Randy and Michael as they're driving several of the projects, and then a few of you individually. Tim's got the mic, and you can stand up where you're at. I've talked to 3 or 4 of you to give your vision. And what we're really after is you grasping this, everybody in our church is grasping these plans sort of step by step, first getting a hold of the vision of it and beginning to think about your role, and most of you are involved in some way or another in our previous initiatives and plans. And then you'll have an opportunity to ask questions a lot more in detail in the cluster meetings, and then you'll be given that form to go through and indicate areas of interest in service and ways that you think you can contribute to the different initiatives. It's strategic intent is the term that we use, because this isn't a master plan where we detail how everything's going to happen. It's a general strategy. But I think it's most important at this stage in the game to just begin to pick up the vision of some of the pieces. And so I'm going to attempt to do this kind of, if I had a swivel chair, you know, this would be, this would be so much easier. I got to share one thing, though, that right at the beginning here that we shared this morning, but we've got about 3 times the people of what we have on our Sunday mornings, which is good, because we want our churches to be multiplying and growing. That's where the base is. But as you know, and you'll get one of these master plans at the cluster meetings when we're completed. But as you know, we've got a lot of different partners overseas. India and China are our biggest projects overseas. I just got back last night from both India and China. And I was the last cohort that I was in. A cohort is where we have leaders of church planting movements or networks that come together for training in an educational cohort where they all work and study together for either the master's or their doctorate of ministry. And I was feeling kind of discouraged through the last one I was in, because some of the guys were covered over with ministry. They were doing a great job with the first principles, but they weren't getting the leadership series done, hadn't done all of their reading in the paradigm papers. And so it's kind of like motivation time. But then one of the guys says, I got something to share. And it turns out his name's Edwin Simon, and he and his wife are both involved in our degree program in translating the New Testament, because you can take that as a track. In other words, if there's a people group you're trying to reach and they don't have a New Testament in their language, you can take on that project, put a team together, Wycliffe Associates comes in and pays for it, and then but they're in our degree program for this. And Bill Burns, who's on our team here, is leading the those tracks and is involved in having helped start now about 160 New Testament starts. So he's on the ground a lot, and he's and right now this week he's kind of out in a village. He's not. He's in a rough area. At any rate, this Simon, he and his wife both they're doing three New Testament translations. He and his wife and another person in the cohort. And one translation is his wife's some language, and another translation is his language. So they began this process after the training with Build and the WA, and they've got several New Testament books translated. But because they got the new translation skills, and this is where people in their own mother tongue can get a New Testament. So they got several of the books done, but because of the new translation skills, they went ahead and started translating the first principles. And they're so happy, just glowing what he says, to have a New Testament and have a first principles in their language when nothing has been in their language. And that they're passing it around and sharing it. And so as a result, a bunch of people have come to Christ, and there's 700 in that tribe in the first principles. So that kind of reminded us that our main objective is not just accomplishing the degrees, but and so that's a real reward for Bill, I'm sure, when he's out in a village right now. We journeyed into this pathway of deconstructing ourselves as a single church and reconstructing as a network of churches with the view of ultimately multiplying to a whole number of churches. In fact, our goal in this coming year is 68 churches that would either be ones that we start in, this next plan phase, or churches that join the network, like is happening in Little Rock, and become part of a network with a vision of reaching Ames and Des Moines. So we have our general grand strategy, and then these individual projects. One of the projects is we were going to try to build a physical resource center in Des Moines, and instead we're going to establish a virtual resource center. Michael, would you explain what a virtual resource center is and what the vision is for that?
So a virtual resource center is, we already have businesses that are in our, people who own businesses that are in our churches in Des Moines, and we meet there right now on Thursday evenings, but there's more things that we want to be able to do in the years and days ahead. And so we want to continue to utilize those buildings that the businesses are using from the benefactors that are in our churches already. So we're not going to build a new building. We're going to leverage the existing building that's there that's used for business. But we want to, on part of the plan I'm looking at it, is really getting a team together that can envision what do we want to do in Des Moines, Rick, Scott, James, what do we want to do in Des Moines, and what things does that resource center need to have in order to, like, one of the biggest things that we have in Des Moines is an average income of $18,000 or $19,000 in our neighborhood. That's the average annual income. 70% don't finish high school in East and North, for example. So you have 1,000 kids that start in ninth grade, and you have, you know, you'll have 300, 400 that'll actually make it to the 12th grade. So we could, there's a lot of classes as far as general education that we could offer, a lot of parenting classes, budgeting classes, putting resume together classes. But we need some space for that, some more spaces for that. So when we say virtual, what we really mean is utilize the existing space, perhaps, maybe remodel the space we have. Maybe we can have Rick get a different building. That's what we mean by a virtual resource hub.
And keeping much more of the resources that way in.
Yeah, we don't want to, as soon as you buy a building, as a church anyway, then you're under that you're under that for a series of a long time, well, however long you would take the loan out, then you're obligated to it monthly. Whereas if the business is utilizing it and using it for the community and for their business, then we can utilize it as well. So,
mm-hmm. One of our objectives is to systematically both train leaders and plant churches. And actually, there's three ways churches are planted. One is that out of our apostolic team, we're strategic, and there's particular areas that we feel like we want to go after planting a church there because we want to get anchored into a particular group that we're trying to reach. Generally speaking, though, we want our churches that exist to be multiplying. And then a third is just a spontaneous church that begins with somebody meeting in a coffee house, maybe around the first principles or something like that. But we have three on-ramps. One is the life to the end, where you build your life plan. That group can turn into a church. Another is the story, the walkthrough, as an evangelistic outreach group. And a third one is what Randy put together off of one of our tools called Parenting with a Plan, where we pull young couples together that are beginning to think through how they're going to go through this process of beginning to raise kids. All three of those are great on-ramps for producing new churches. But both Randy and James are really in charge of the integration that moves all the way across the training of leaders to helping the clusters multiply their churches. And Randy's in charge of our ordered learning leadership training here, which we have about 90 in, and there's about 15 in Des Moines that James is in charge of at this stage. And the goal is to grow that to about 340 and about 68 churches either that we plant or are involved in and networking. So just both of you, give us kind of a snapshot of your vision of the coming 3 years. This also ties in, by the way, our process that goes from rebuild to an urban center degree to the kind of leadership training that would, go all the way to our, top leaders in the churches. But give us a little a vision of the next 3 years and what you see happening.
Yeah, immediately one thing that's come to mind is as you were talking, Jeff, is the relationship between leadership development and mission. And as we in our cluster, we just planted probably 9 months ago now a Phoenix church. And I've heard multiple people as that whole process unfolded, the lead up to it, and then on the other side of it, the recognition of, man, I've got to up my game, both to respond to the needs that are there as we plant. But how do we compete with that? Yeah,
that's my way of expansion right there.
Right there, it's happening in front of our eyes. But as we multiply, I think what often happens is that there's an energy around that. And for example, with Phoenix Church, we had 10 or 12 guests that were coming regularly within weeks of the plant, simply because there's room to stretch your wings a bit. So then you have, it was recognized pretty quickly by some, if I don't get my game up, when we plant again, we're going to be in trouble. There's a relationship there between leadership development and training and the capacity to expand, the capacity to multiply. But I think we've got to keep in front of ourselves. The ordered learning isn't just for, just for ordered learning's sake. It is to be able to participate in the mission of our Lord. And as we're equipped, the Lord opens doors. And so we have multiple cohorts here in Ames, and I know multiple ones down in Des Moines that are in various levels of ordered learning. There's a plan and strategy for that, and I'm personally very excited for the caliber of people that are emerging out of that. And I think the opportunities for expansion are real.
And Randy and Aaron's cluster have planted two churches and have developed a very good process for working with our other churches in helping the churches themselves multiply. And both Michael and Randy finished their master's in the Antioch School this year, and our goal is from 2018 to 2020 to have our 15 leaders that are in the Antioch School now finish their programs well, because that helps us, you know, with a stronger and stronger anchor in our apostolic team that moves amongst and helps stimulate the strategic planting of churches. James, what do you see in your situation?
Yeah, so we've spent Thursday nights over the last 2-3 years actually now, specifically using it for inside of our own network and our own context, and inside of one degree cohort that's engaged right now that's through a partner church in East Des Moines. And it's we were getting good participation from everybody inside of our church. At one point, we had every member inside of our cluster engaged in learning. And as a result, what I think the natural piece that comes out of it, especially from just that perspective of our church inside that network, that cluster of churches, is we're getting people that are becoming mature and are wanting to engage in ministry. And so the next step is to deploy them out to the city and to engage with the city. And so what we want to see happen is we want to see our Thursday nights expand. We want to see more people come to that arena to be able to begin to wrestle with God's word, become mature, and to grow. But we want to start to partner with churches in our area to really make an impact on the city. Michael threw some statistics out at you about our specific neighborhood we live in, but the reality is the city, last year we had 25 homicides in the city of Des Moines, which is the highest amount of homicides we've had in 39 years. There was a shooting this past weekend in Urbandale. The poverty level is at about 16%, which equals out to about 60,000 people inside the city of Des Moines that are below the poverty line. And our divorce rate's around 14%. And it's getting lower in the state of Iowa, but the state of Iowa has a divorce rate that's higher than most of the Midwest and the United States, according to the last census. So the reality is that the city is... If you're trying to give it a report card, while it's growing and we're doing great things, making opportunities for people to come and live inside of it, almost from a level of development, it just doesn't seem like it's doing great. And so we want to see the gospel take over the city of Des Moines. And so that's our next step, is to start to work and partner with churches that are in our area to try to deploy and create stronger churches through the Build Institute and the Antioch School, so we can raise up leaders and grassroots leaders to go out and do the work of ministry inside the city.
And James and Rick and Michael and their families all moved down into the inner city with the view of using that as a base for planting churches. And also with what we'll talk about a little bit later, which is called our Antioch Initiatives. And we're launching the Central Iowa Antioch Initiative, which will pattern itself after what we've done in Little Rock, which is the Central Arkansas Antioch Initiative. And as we were prototyping those out now, we just didn't have the organizational capacity to go full-blown on our Central Iowa Antioch Initiative. But now we feel like this is the timing is getting right. So them moving down, the churches getting planted, getting anchored, the virtual resource center tying together businesses and beginning to lay a financial foundation under that will open the door for us moving ahead. One of our goals is that we would bring James on full-time in a combination with the city initiative and doing some work with Build, and that would allow us to be able to drive that initiative. We feel like he's really got the gifts to... and the passion as well to move that forward. As long as I'm going down that pathway, we have two ways of being able to systematically reach into the city and give people an opportunity that they didn't have before, and that's in rebuild and the urban center degrees. You can take the bachelor's degree and turn it into what we call an urban center degree. It's a fully accredited university degree, and 40% of it can be a trade, an occupation, learning to be a carpenter. All that can count in towards the degree. So somebody gets a degree and a trade, but many times we have to start back because of 3-4 generations of poverty in what we call rebuild. And I have Nancy and Randy in charge of rebuild. Randy carries it all the way through from rebuild to the degree program onto the establishing process that we want the training process we want every leader going through. So why don't we have both of you reflect a little bit on what rebuild is and what you see unfolding over these 3 years. Maybe we'll start with you on this one, James.
Okay. So as we're engaging with folks out there, we see lots of opportunities that where people are coming from a background where they're not well equipped to take on the world, whether it's generations of poverty or sin or just whatever it is. There's not an opportunity that things have gone well and under-resourced, not equipped, generations of not being equipped and not getting around any sort of foundation to base life well off of. So the hope is that we can partner with people and be able to pull them into our fold where we'd sit down with them and create a plan that gets at kind of the root of their issues, and from that builds an establishment path where they can get a foundation and learn how to try to fight all of that baggage that comes from that background of just not having it and work towards a productive life, one that has meaning and purpose and fits inside of society well and they can find a way in which they can fit into it where they haven't in the past. And so we've got, just in the last few months, we've had, I don't know how many opportunities have just popped up that we're actively engaged in some sort of conversation around where it's not necessarily full-blown, but we're in the process of at least talking about what it takes to get that done.
Yeah, by my count, I think we have maybe 6 to 10 scenarios that are, where there's active conversation and an opportunity, and there's a book that a number of us have been reading. Some of you have read it fairly thoroughly, but the Framework for Understanding Poverty, and kind of buried in that book, there's a line or two based on a study that was done where the essence of it was that scientific studies have shown that those that successfully move out of generational poverty, that they're more apt to do that if they've had some connection with a church. And the study was just based on not even kind of coming into a fully embedded community, but there's an association with a church that has provided some mentoring, some support, and so forth. But that little piece is, when you think of the impact that collectively we can have, as we're our families are engaged, we're all getting equipped further, we're maturing and developing in the Lord, and we've got a vision for our community and a vision for our city, and are able to come around families and situations where there is brokenness and deep need. I mean, our impact can just be huge, and so there's a structure in place with rebuild and a process that is getting further refinement in terms of how teams will form around individuals that come across our paths, and that there's various ways that can happen. But as it does happen, there's a process by which teams will be formed to respond to the need, in a number of scenarios. They may be living in one of our homes for a period of up to 3 years. And then there's going to be multiple opportunities for various ones of you that have particular gift sets and particular talents, you know, whether it's fixing a car or helping with budgets or, you know, tutoring. But for various ones of you to plug in at strategic points in a way that really can help. So, you know, be mindful of that and be thinking about that. There's going to be ways that we may be tapping any one of you in that process. But the opportunity is huge. And my observation, too, is that as we provide even an element of genuine help in some of the situations, they've got 10 friends that need it just as much. And so, you know, as you think about, you know, just the expansion of the gospel and us being able to have an imprint in our cities, this is going to be a key piece moving forward.
The newest church that Randy's Cluster just planted, primarily, or part of the key of it was a rebuild situation. Right? Rebuild is an official program called RE/build, B-O-I-L-D. And the idea is that we would make a commitment to somebody for 3 years. They come into that program. If they need a home, we have people increasingly being trained to bring them into their home for that period of time and to help with the finishing of schooling, helping with some life skills, helping to be able to get a trade or a job. And that kind of change, research shows, takes about a 3-year period of a lot of support. So ideally, there would be one home. We build a team around them. Then they're also part of a family of families and allows us to be able to do what only can be done in a niche fashion here and there by the different social services. And again, puts us back in the game, you know, at the center of the city. The day after tomorrow, I'll be in Little Rock, and they're going to now introduce Rebuild. They got 6 major churches, large churches in the city, a number of small ones, all working on the Central Antioch Initiative, and that's our training. And now, by the middle of the year, they're going to introduce Rebuild and their first urban center cohort. And so we're getting some structure together. Then part of our goal is we're also going to be producing 3 manuals, a shepherding counseling manual, a Rebuild manual, and an urban center degree manual. And so we're working out those prototypes at this stage, and we're getting pretty good national response of interest. Ray Williams, you can see all this on the video on our WebBuild website about the Little Rock partnership, and Ray and Dee, who's an elder with a very successful business who's leading one of the cohorts now, are flying over with Michael and I to Chattanooga to the McCollum Foundation. And they're going to be explaining to the McCollum Foundation the success of this, and then we'll be interacting all afternoon with Randy on the next steps in the Chattanooga initiative. And then the next week we'll be in Patterson with the Patterson initiative, which is, again, one of the toughest places around. But we'll, in these 3 years, we'll get those manuals complete and the systems in place. Michael, you and I have talked quite a bit about the whole idea of the partnership of our churches with the build team. You put together the piece in here that summarizes the Build International Apostolic Team, the strategic projects that we have, and again, how important that is and how it relates to our churches in partnership with our team, and recognizing that we're in this together. You want to just walk through that idea a little bit?
So I have to tell you a little story first. Was it Christmas? I think this was Christmas. You know what I'm going to say?
Yeah. You're going to say that you had to...
No, don't steal from... Hold on. I know what you're going to say, what you think I'm going to say, but I'm not going to let you say I'm going to say it. Okay. Well, that is true, but it doesn't have quite the impact otherwise. But
I just stayed on the edges.
Okay. The around Christmas time, Jeff and I were putting first drafts of trying to get our vapor in onto papers, is the language we like to use. But we were putting this together, and Jeff was saying something about how the build and the work needs to be, more of it needs to be on here. And I was like, I don't know, man. It needs to be, we got so many things going on. It's, if you confuse, you lose. That was in my head. You know, this is Ames Des Moines stuff. We got to keep it Ames Des Moines and Central Iowa. That was my thinking. That was what was in my head. And Jeff's like, I think you're wrong. I said, let's keep it simple. Let's keep it simpler. So that was my train of thought. And then I don't know what the teaching was on in the new year, but or the one prior. But I'll tell you, everybody, it really, I think where I grew in my understanding in the gospel was realizing that, and it sounds so simple, but this is Antioch. And all of us are as much a part of going to Indonesia like Bill is right now as Bill is. All of us are as much a part of going to India and China as Jeff was the last few weeks. Everything we're talking about with rebuild, it did not happen in Little Rock. They could not get to this point to house people and take care of people well across their network of churches until their leaders truly were established in the ideas. Because otherwise, if it's just a Sunday morning thing and that's all the depth of establishment, then you don't have a unified strategy that can truly rebuild a person's a whole group of people's lives. So for me, it's just another piece of the puzzle, if you will, that's been connected into the main puzzle. Build's work is all of our work. Everyone is a piece of it, and I think that's it. So on this strategic intent document, we're going to list some of the core build team projects so that all of you can have an insight into. These are some main things. Now, we're doing a lot of different things always, but these are the main things that we're trying to do around the world of building the global network. We're all recovering the Antioch tradition, all of us. Collectively, that's our purpose. But the build team in particular, our job is as solal apostolic leaders is to move amongst the churches around the globe, as you see Paul did in Acts, 13 and 14, but as you see it, 2 Corinthians 10, 11, 12, 13, you see how he defends his work and what he was doing in his team's work. So I think that's why it's going to show up on this document, and our churches should be aware of those strategic things that our team is doing.
And really, when we explain what build is to large or small partners internationally, we simply say build is an apostolic team with two powerful tools, the Build Institute and the Antioch School. And that will give them what they need as resources to establish their churches, stabilize their movement, and see that those church planting movements continue to multiply. Also, you're building, one of the goals on here is one of the strategic projects, Michael, is the next generation benefactor team.
Yes.
So that's, what do you want, a specific question?
Yeah, so we, part of Paul's team, when you look at the model, is he had a third or so of his team was a group of benefactors. And I think of, now is the time where the next generation of leaders, especially those who are in business and can really benefit the base of the Build Apostolic team need to come together, become more one-minded about this work, become more established in the ideas of what it means to be a benefactor. So we're going to meet four-ish. Do you hear that commitment, David? Four-ish times this year. Maybe one less, maybe a few more. But I'm thinking of Babu Rao, who some of you know. He is doing his artifact, and he's starting right now. He's trying to figure out how to make church planners, how they can be bivocational, but be self-sustaining, be self-enterprising ministers of the gospel. He's trying to figure that out. And so that's his manual, his artifact that he wants to write for his degree. But he's starting a tea business right now, and he needs our expertise on, I think, of Ben Engelman. You know, how do you start a business? What things do you got to think about? What things are important to think about in the beginning? Because you read the books, and anyway, we have a wealth of experience and knowledge that I think our second generation benefactor team can really plug into. And I think Babu Rao in particular is a guy that he's my age. He's got how many networks? 129?
129 networks.
129 church networks, not churches, church networks that are LKMs, he calls them, little known ministries. If we could just be successful just with him, it would be a feat. But he's trying with, and I don't know how many church planters are in those 129, I don't have that statistic yet. But it's an enormous number that we could have an impact on, just helping them be self-enterprising ministers of the gospels, help them start businesses, figure out what things they need to look at, how to do a balance sheet, a cash flow state, you know, those type things. So that's some of the vision for
us. Another part of the younger benefactor team is when we launch the Central Iowa Initiative, which will pull together will accelerate church planting and pull together a number of churches that would participate with us in what we call the Antioch Initiative, which includes Rebuild and the degree programs, et cetera, as well as what we call Seeking the Welfare of the City. We have to raise a good base for that. What we know from Little Rock now is that costs about $275,000 a year when the thing is up and running and self-sustaining. So there'll be some fundraising involved in that as well, besides just the expertise of it. And that's important because the reason why the church was self-sustaining in the early church is because a third of the people on Paul's apostolic team were Ephesians 4:11 gifted types, apostle, prophet, evangelist, pastors, and teachers. A third were women co-workers, and a third were benefactors. And learning to develop benefactors in a way that when God has blessed with money, they're integrated into a strategy and genuinely participating on that team is very, very important and critical for us to model as well for a number of the movements that we're working with globally. Let's talk just a little bit, and then I'm going to interview just a couple others out here in a couple of other leaders that are out here. But we're going to launch what's called Launch and Steward the Central Iowa Antioch Initiative. And this is a 9-step process over a 5-year period, but most of them are in those first 2 years where there'll be a gathering together of a selecting of 5-6 churches in the Ames-Des Moines area to participate with us at the beginning to begin to build the partnership and prototype. And as the thing unrolls, then we bring together about 30 to 40 churches. And we've successfully done this in Little Rock. We're on the same course in Patterson, which is another real rough area. And we feel like we now have the organizational capacity to move ahead in these coming 2 years all these goals are from 2018 to 2020, you know, in our plan. Maybe, James, you could talk a little bit about that Antioch initiative and why you think Des Moines is, you know, is key for that, and what you and Michael have seen beginning to emerge on that.
Yeah, it's ripe in that, you know, as we talk about the statistics and things that are happening inside the city, relatively speaking, I don't think the church has much of an impact in really guiding any sort of pieces to correct and fix it. And so we want to be able to partner with churches to be able to engage in those activities well, and rather than have nonprofits and secular organizations and parachurch organizations run those pieces that are going to be engaging with the city well, the church needs to lead that front, and it needs to be driving that front. And really, the way it's going to get done is through strong leaders and strong people inside of those churches to be able to do the work. It appears to be that the city is ripe for having conversations with some churches, where in the past churches have not wanted to partner with one another. They've had their own area that they're doing their own thing. They've got their niche and they're doing it well, or so they say. But now it seems like there seems to be a lot more partnership happening. There's a lot of younger guys that are really kind of church planning. There's ethnic churches in the area that really want to make an impact in the city. And talk about the underprivileged and help those people move forward. And so it seems like this is a really opportune time to be able to start to have the conversation, to be able to engage well. And unfortunately, we haven't had that conversation much. It's been a very small piece of what we've done inside of the city of Des Moines. So it's going to take some time to have these conversations with these churches and church leaders around what it's going to look like to turn the city upside down and to take it back over for what it needs to be taken over for.
I think that, again, we're positioned very well to move ahead on this. We've targeted a couple of our key intentional plants, where one was originally a group that was built around, it started out as a group and eventually was one of our churches, started around Seek the Welfare of the City. And we had a whole number of individuals that were committed to being in that church and engaging in the city in a fresh and intentional way. One of those was John Hala, John and Mary, who eventually decided to move back to Ames, grow the architecture business more, and be involved in very strategic leadership in the city. And eventually that led to what happened last November of John being elected mayor here. And John taught our Seek the Welfare of the City a whole number of times, and now is sitting in the seat of really being able to see what are the needs in the city. And John, if Tim's got the mic, if you'd get it up here to John, if just tell us what your kind of, a little bit about what your thoughts are, having gone through that process of teaching Seek the Welfare of the City, and knowing that one of our ways of impacting the city, if we're maturing churches, as talks about in Titus, that we engage in our people, engage in good occupation and meet pressing needs. And you've taught that course several times, and now are able to see the kind of the whole snapshot of the city, and really Des Moines as well, with some of those relationships and other mayors. So just tell us a little bit about your thoughts now that God's opened the door for you to be in this kind of position.
That was a long question. One of the things that struck me going through Seek the Welfare of the City was being able to identify what the needs are. We talked about this quite a bit in our groups as we went through the class. And it's one thing to just go and talk to, you know, one or two groups in a community and try and understand what the needs are. It's a whole different thing to be actually exposed in leadership. And I'm only 26 days into being mayor, so I'm still getting my feet wet. But already I've been involved with some conversations with people who really are passionate about specific needs, and actually some of the things that we're talking about even tonight, or that James and Michael in particular are talking about tonight, those needs exist also here in the Ames community. So I kind of see the first 6 months to a year of just really getting, building relationships and becoming really aware of what the needs are. I do think there are tremendous opportunities. I call it the common terminology is public-private partnerships, where entities may come together and help come alongside a public entity to meet needs. I think there are some definite ones that we can start looking at. One of my visions is there's a number of churches in our faith communities in Ames that I think have a heart for specific needs in the community. And if we could see, I think it would send a tremendous message to the community to see churches working together and being one-minded to help address, you know, needs that exist. And certainly Rebuild is one platform that can certainly be used to reach out. And also there's a lot of nonprofits that do also have a heart and passion for those that are in need as well, too. So it's in a very, very formulative stages, just kind of getting exposed to it, understanding what those needs are. But it's a great opportunity. It's a great privilege to serve. There's just other things that I'm becoming aware of that we need to be focusing on as a community. It's premature at this time to really, you know, delve into those, and probably take a lot longer than a few minutes, you know, talking about it. But I would definitely say that the Seek the Welfare of the City, going through that course, and in particular talking about politeia, or public life, being involved in good occupations, and looking at ways to really benefit the community using your gifts and talents was really formative and foundational, and really, that's what I went back to a lot, and as we went through and evaluated whether or not to even run for office, I did pour over my notes quite a bit and talked to a number of people who had gone through that class also, and just kind of bounced ideas, you know, back and forth as well too. So I think that's probably about as much as I have to share on the spur of the moment on that one in particular. So
one of the things that we think is going to move forward and integrate, John and I've agreed to meet Mondays when I'm here, and just as he's starting to get exposed to different opportunities, see if we can't begin to categorize the kinds of things that might be responded to by a whole church or might be responded to by a cluster. And so we hope to figure out a process for that to really develop. Our core engine will be Rebuild. Because already we have the attention of, doesn't matter what city we're in, but even in our own city, we have the attention of the social services, we have the attention of the school, and Jenny, Sam and Jenny Schill. Jenny's been put in a very strategic position, the need is great. I don't know what the number was, but last year there were listed 150 kids that the school had in the category of homeless. And that is, and that they may, the family may be together, may be a single parent, but nobody's watching the kids, or they're completely homeless and moving with other kids. And the ability to be successful and help them rebuild is something that a city and a government just can't do. It has to happen in real community. So then out of that, we'll be in touch with opportunities for service, short-term or long-term, hopefully on a larger scale. And the reason why we're going this direction is we're developing now the organizational capacity to do this, because we have strong churches. You're all committed deeply to training and establishing process that allows us to be able to respond. And that's what Titus says what Paul says to Titus, when the church is set in order and strong leadership, older men, older women, younger men, younger women, as a household of families, strong individual families being built, the outcome is let our people engage in good occupations and meet pressing needs. And that's how then we impact a city, and the gospel progresses forward and is properly seen. One of the besides the church that we sort of targeted at the business community under the idea of impacting the city is also a another one of our targets, if you would, is the we have a very strong in Ames. We have a very strong community of about 300 of what would be considered the true artists, and the London Underground type of group, of which we have a crew sitting over here. And God's given us a real open door in that area, and the artists are the ones that are always carrying the conversation first in a city. And so part of our strategy is to, we designed the facility as a resource center with the view that we could display, artists could display their work out there, and we would eventually reach out into that community. And Sam leads that church with me. Sam and Jenny were involved in helping us launch the rebuild, and partially with Jenny's position, and they've opened their homes, and they're about ready to open it a third time in the rebuild process. But Sam, if you would give us a little bit of your vision in the coming couple years of some of the things you think would help us to be able to serve that art community in a way that could make significant a significant contribution into the artists' lives, and also be able to engage in a true picture of the gospel moving out the right way.
Yeah, thanks, Jeff. So, like John mentioned, we talked about Seek the Welfare of the City. You know, this group origins were around all participating in those that course and being with each other in a midweek, actually, previous to the churches coming together. And then, as we've heard good stories about John's success, Nathan and Steph Haley were part of that group, and now Nathan's the president of a little league. I mean, that's a big deal, right? And then they left me with the artists. So if you could see that as a positive thing or not, I don't know yet. But that's actually very positive, because what the collection of artists we have is significant. We have musicians. Many of you know Matt Cronus and see Matt Cronus's work. He was in Florence this last year. Jojo is the best at like a lot of things, but a very good drummer, a poet, and one of the most creative guys that you'll know, and is very networked within the and respected within the arts community. So we have people deep within that. Scott and Jinya as a couple are well known downtown from Scott's radio show and Jinya's work with her pet portrait. So a lot of talent there. So what we want to do is, in many ways, like from the sense of Seek the Welfare of the City, is let's do things to impact that community. And a couple ideas have emerged from that that are again have origins with our own group, is how to help make artists, how to help market an artist, how to help make an artist visible to everyone in this room, their work, what they do, maybe some of the services they provide. For example, Sean Houston's a performing artist. Is great. He plays downtown, he does shows, but he also teaches lessons, helping them connect their art with the community, helping them potentially make some money with their art or their expertise in that, and help not only our group by doing that, but also connect with their friends and other artists within the community. Because I think one need within the community, from again looking at it from how can we seek the welfare of the arts community, is helping others create a brand and create awareness of the work that they do, and that we can all appreciate that. And a byproduct of that, certainly, I think, will be connecting more of their art with our church network alike there. As well as we're looking at ways to, again, in the same light, create a venue for experiencing some of these artists' work. So whether it's doing things more strategic with our building, or it's doing small shows in people's homes across the City Church network, using and bringing artists into your home and within your neighborhood and showcasing some of their work or their music. So we've a lot of really interesting conversations about how to not just keep the artist superpower that we have over at Jeff's house on Sunday night, but bringing that out within the community at large and then City Church network, but also connecting this growing, like Jeff mentioned, 300 plus some very unique arts community that kind of lives in this downtown area out to the whole community. And I think that is, from a Seek the Welfare of the City perspective, that's just a good thing to do. A city like ours, with students, with growing businesses, need to appreciate the culture and the arts that the city has in it. And I think there's a lack of that connection and our group uniquely could help do that. And I'll be tapping a number of other people from other churches on the shoulders as we continue developing some of these ideas together. So it's not just a South Campus thing. It's a could potentially be a larger involvement from some of the network. Did I answer enough questions there, Jeff?
Well, I just wanted to add that, Matt, you have a studio in downtown Des Moines at the Mainframe. Isn't that what it's called? Used to be a place where they had, what business was there before? They had Mainframe computers at the CenturyLink phone company, something. Anyway, it's called the Mainframe, and he has a studio there and a couple different levels. And you can go there and see his art and see other artisans' work, but all different kinds of I shouldn't have said that because I can't finish that sentence, but photography and sewing thing, glass blowing, which everyone thinks is awesome, the glass blowing thing, but your art's cooler than the glass blower. But anyway, it reaches down into Des Moines, and it's a really awesome spot in Des Moines just to go down and hang out. And so it's really Ames and Des Moines, really.
And really, when you're in the seriousness of that art world, there's been an ability to see through a shallow kind of evangelical Christianity that's been out there for a long time. But being able to see the real thing in small, authentic communities the way God intended it and how he turned the Roman Empire upside down in the first place is a very important way of being able to communicate the gospel in those contexts. Now, there's other things that we could talk about on the initiative, on our plan here. And like I say, we'll be finalizing some things tomorrow and then working in clusters so that you understand it. And we want all of you to carefully look at this plan because that's what's going to guide us over the next 3 years and look at your own gifts and abilities and what you have to be able to contribute. The thing that we kind of feel as leadership across this 213 to 217 of our previous plan is that we've now got a number of things that we had laid out that were necessary for us to really build the infrastructure for and to build the prototypes. So whether it's rebuild, whether it's the Antioch initiative of moving forward and planting new churches or getting churches, not just churches that'll work together in a shallow way, but churches that'll respond to our challenge of the way of Christ and the apostles and will come into this kind of training process and program with us. We feel like that we've got the capacity to do that. We know how to multiply churches. Randy's created a very good process and Michael's going to be working with all the clusters, helping sharpen the plans and holding us accountable to that. So we really want you to get a hold of this thing, see the pathway that's laid out for 218, 220, evaluate your own involvement. And what we wanted to do tonight was just give you a little bit of a taste of what we consider to sort of be the next phase now that we've got some of these pieces in place. A little bit more publishing to do on the rebuild manual and the urban degree. And we are going to finish. We published the story and the Gospels, and we are going to finish this year with Paul's early letters and also then work on these other tools so that we'll be able to move out these initiatives. But just to get a taste of the vision tonight, you'll be going over the plan in detail in the coming couple months. So James, would you close us in prayer? And
Lord God, we thank you for who you are and what you are, and we thank you for this opportunity to gather as churches, as a family of families, as we come here, we share a meal, we spend time remembering who and what you are and the sacrifice of the cross. I thank you for the men and women that are here that have engaged in this into this plan, into this movement that will be moving your word to the world around us. I pray that we come to unity and one-mindedness around the issues and around where we sit inside it. I pray for purpose and drive and desire to do the work that's set in front of us, Lord. I thank you for this opportunity to gather here and speak with leaders who are casting vision and are helping to attack the world around us with your word. I pray that as we leave here tonight, you'd watch over us and keep us safe, that you'd lift up the concerns we have. I pray that you would forgive us when we fall short, because we fall short so often and don't do what is needed to do, but that you would lift us up and put us back on the path and in the way you want us to go, Lord. We ask for your forgiveness and ask for your guidance through the Holy Spirit to do the work ahead of us. We lift all these things, Lord, up into your glorious name. Amen.